This is the Tim Power Show on your VOCM. The views and opinions of this program are not necessarily those of this station. Here's Tim.
Hello, everybody. Well, what a day it was yesterday. I got to throw to start the show a massive bouquet out to the VOCM team from Claudette's incredible stick handling of my inability to text numbers to making sure, Claudette, you know, we went that extra 10 minutes, but you saved it there, to our colleague Richard running up and down Kenmount Road, to Sarah and Greg and Linda. What did you think, Claudette? I hope we don't have a day like that today, or maybe we should. How are you feeling today after yesterday?
Wow, I felt like I needed to go home and go on vacation. No, it was quite interesting because, you know, I've been in radio since my late teens.
And so only a year or two, really.
Right? And I've never actually had that experience where there's breaking news and two of us trying to figure it out live on air how we're going to make it happen, and not being able to communicate off the air so it seems seamless, because then you have Linda Swain, who is ready to go with the news, and then in my head I'm like, who is he going to be talking to? So it all worked out. The main thing is that the listener got the information that they needed, which was on everybody's mind, what was going to be happening with the Newfoundland Growlers.
Yeah, and that was the fortunate thing, and again, it wouldn't be possible for the VOCM team. We work at a great organization that allowed us the flexibility, that gave you and I the opportunity to say, all right, let's trust them both, and we were able to have Dean McDonald on the air, I'm sure, delivering news he didn't want to deliver, but I promise I don't have any text messages that are going to come in at 4:59 today, okay?
It was worth it and well needed, so thank you for that, Tim.
Well, thank you, Claudette, and I'll let Claudette go have a break now before I terrorize her towards the end of the show. But again, first-class job by everybody at VOCM yesterday, and I'm not wanting to bask in the glow of what has been a difficult day, no doubt, for Growlers employees, Growlers fans, the province. We're giving this a lot of attention because, as we spoke to Dean yesterday, as we've spoken about it today on the airwaves, it's both practically important because there are people who have lost their jobs, and it's symbolically important. As much as we, you know, talk about the importance of having air routes to all the major centers and realistic air travel and bringing in festivals, you get judged around the globe by whether or not sometimes you have a professional sports team and how well that professional sports team operates. We're going to talk more about this today. Of course, Brent Mead, who you just heard in Sarah's newscast, is going to join us in about 5 minutes. We're going to have Ben Murphy back again. Ben, of course, he lost a role he had yesterday. He was a broadcaster for 5 years with the Growlers. Going to get a feel from Ben as to how the players and the community are doing around all of this. I mean, I feel a little sense of loss, and I'm not a Growlers season ticket holder. Maybe I should be, but wonderful trips I've had with my son to Newfoundland have all involved games at the Growlers facility at the Mary Brown Center. And, you know, there are lots of us who have made memories. The last game we went to, my son Patrick and I went with Greg Smith and his dad, Wayne, and it was just like a family outing, a special afternoon together. And when I told Patrick last night that the Growlers had disbanded, he was in a little bit of shock. Again, look, I know there are bigger challenges in the world. I know there are people out there that are struggling financially, that are struggling emotionally, and I don't want to discount this or overinflate that. But we will talk a little bit more about this today. We're also going to talk about something I think that'll connect with a lot of listeners of this program and this station. How about some tax fairness for single seniors? Now, this is direct pandering by me because I know my mother, who is a widower, who kindly listens to this program, this is an issue that's dear to her and dear to many seniors, because there are lots of senior citizens, people 65 years of age and older, who feel they are discriminated against by the tax system as it works in Canada. There's a group called Single Seniors for Tax Fairness. We're going to have Elizabeth Brown from that group on to chat with us about some proposals they've brought forward to the federal government with the forthcoming federal budget on April 16th. Though if you look at the national news at any moment, you'll see most everything in that April 16th budget seems to be being announced now as the federal government tries to change its political fortunes. And we're going to dive into one of those issues, one of the issues around political fortunes, and it involves our own premier. We are going to, last part of the show, have Susan Delacourt on. Susan, many of you will know from other radio and television, is a national columnist with the Toronto Star. She wrote a piece yesterday responding in part and thinking about the proposition made by Premier Fury to the Prime Minister to have a meeting around the carbon levy and try and take some of the poison out of the political rhetoric that is out there and perhaps, you know what, get at addressing this issue. So we're going to talk to Susan about that, some of what she thinks, calling for or reinforcing the idea that perhaps there ought to be one of those first ministers meetings. Remember those around Meech Lake if you're old enough, with Clyde Wells and Brian Mulroney going at it hammer and tong over who was distinct and who wasn't and why that was important. Interestingly, there's also a piece in the Globe and Mail today about the need for more civility and unity of purpose in the way we deal with each other in politics. We try and do that on this show, but it's got to happen more in the political realm. So we're going to talk to Susan about that. And if you've got anything you want to say, of course, we'll try today to get you on. Look, other things paying attention to today, which we'll try and cover later in the week, and I say this before we take a break, that's the foreign interference inquiry. Now you're like, oh, is he talking about Ottawa stuff? Well, he's talking about this because there is a federal inquiry into whether or not different actors have interfered in our electoral process. And the former leader of the Conservative Party of Canada, Aaron O'Toole, appeared today at this inquiry. He's making the case that there was foreign interference. He experienced it, and it cost the Conservative seats in the last election. This stuff isn't all far removed. We've seen cyber attacks in Newfoundland and Labrador. We've seen disinformation campaigns all across the country. Yes, some of them are domestic, but some of them are orchestrated and international. So we're going to pay some more attention to all of this. No misinformation here. The only thing you get is whatever falls out of my mouth. It may be useless information, but I try to make it accurate. All right. We are going to take a break here. When we come back to the Growlers, we're going to talk to Brent Mead, the CEO of St. John's Sports and Entertainment, after the break. All right. Welcome back. Staying on the story of the demise of the Newfoundland Growlers, now pleased to welcome Brent Mead, the CEO of St. John's Sports and Entertainment. Brent, I have to wonder, did you know when you took this job in October, you'd be thrown into the fire? I don't think this is what you hoped the start would be like, though you have no control over this. But your initial reaction on what happened yesterday and the impact, at least it's having on the community, before we get specifically the impact it's having on your organization.
Well, thanks, Tim, for having me. I mean, obviously, very disappointed. I mean, you're right. I came into this last October. One of my priorities was to strengthen and renew the partnership with the Growlers, and I think we were able to do that and certainly had a great relationship. You know, my team and I had a great relationship with the leadership team at the Growlers. And, in fact, my second day on the job, I was introduced to a representative of a potential new owner that is now known to have been Stephen Leal. We know that unfortunately did not come to pass. So very disappointed, obviously, in this news of yesterday, and, you know, certainly disheartened as our staff are, our community is, the fans, the corporate partners that have been supporting the Growlers and us delivering this experience at Mary Brown Center. So overall, very disheartening, very disappointed.
So we all have to look forward now, Brent, and when you're in the business you are in, and it's not an easy one, particularly when you're running an arena, one of the key things arenas need, and that being the Mary Brown Center, are anchor tenants, because it's the anchor tenants who provide you with some form of consistent revenue. venue and make it a tad bit easier, one hopes, to continue to keep the facility operating and keep it properly maintained and the like. I mean, I know you're digesting it. I've heard that. Might there be new thinking brought to bear? And this question specifically is about a reference Dean McDonald made, I think, to the CBC in his virtual news conference yesterday, that one of the things he said was unhelpful was that there previously had been an offer on the table from the city for a 10-year lease. Now, that predated you. That was in 2021, he said. But are St. John Sports and Entertainment prepared to be creative in the way it thinks about landing an anchor tenant different from the way it was before?
Well, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the things I tried to bring to the table when I took this role on last October, Tim, was for us to be, you know, collaborative, partnership-oriented, find the art of the deal, find ways for us to work with our partners to deliver experiences here that would benefit, you know, benefit the hockey team and the management, that would benefit St. John Sports Entertainment, the city, and the taxpayers of the city, that would benefit the fans and those coming to experience that. So finding the ways for us to create and structure deals that could do that. And long-term leases are certainly something that would be in the best interest of all parties. I mean, you know, this has come up, and when I came here, we were in the last year of the lease with the Growlers. There was the opportunity to renew up to 2 years. We were certainly very hopeful, particularly when there was conversations about a new owner, that we would be entering into conversations around a new lease and a longer-term one that would bring the stability, as you so well put just then, to bring stability to the organization in terms of how we operate and run this organization, but also, obviously, to the tenant. Anchor tenants are important. I mean, you're dead on. I mean, they brought 36 game nights here, more if they're into the playoffs. We have the Rogues here as an anchor tenant. They bring 24, more if they make the playoffs, and it looks like they will this year. So, I mean, you know, replacing 36 nights is a challenge. And we will do everything we can to be creative around that and to find ways of doing that. But it does do that. We got to find the art of the deal. We got to think of the art of the possible of what we can do here.
Yeah, in that regard, how much work is now created for your team because you got to fill those nights? I know you have a significant curling championship coming up later in the year. I know you have concerts booked in there. Does this change your strategy, or is it a triage approach you now have to take? Although the hockey season was coming to an end, so I guess you have a little bit of latitude right now. But what does sort of the short-term and medium-term look like in terms of making sure there's incoming revenue? Because ultimately, your owner, our city, for whom most of the listeners in the city are paying taxes to, need to see some return.
So I think the first priority is that, you know, we need to certainly look at how this will impact us operationally and from a budget perspective and all of that. And we will do that because we would have gone into this year with the assumption that we would have had the Growlers finish out their year and also return in the fall. So, yeah. You know, I would say that we will need to do that without a doubt. And we will, you know, reforecast the budget and look at how we need to make operational changes around that. Secondly, though, and is for us to begin to look at the ways that we try to create more activity. When I came here, well, we, you know, at the time, we had the two anchor tenants. My priority was to create more events and activities, whether that's concerts, whether it is, you know, events like the Grand Slam of Curling, other type of those, you know, those large-scale events that you can attract, the multi-day events like Grand Slam of Curling or other things that you could do are an important part of venues like this when you look at what they can do. And so we were going to try to certainly put every effort into that, and we'll continue to do that. The fact that we now need to refine the replacement of those 36 nights does, you know, in some ways mean that we need to be even more creative. Is there a possibility for us to find, you know, a hockey tenant? I know there's a great debate about, is St. John's and this area of the province, in fact, a hockey town? I still argue it is. I know there's a great debate about that. I think there is a market here for it. I mean, the Growlers were averaging 3,700 fans a game. We've had success in the past. If you look at previous teams here, I know people will say, well, we've had them come and go. We have, but some of them did very well. The Ice Caps, when they were here, did very well. And at the end of the day, it was the Winnipeg Jets with the desire to move them closer to Winnipeg. But from a, if you think about it from a fan experience and an organization perspective, they did well. And so, you know, I think there's a market there, whether it's us to come back with a hockey tenant at the professional level or some other type of level. It's a high caliber of hockey that can generate event nights here with good attendance. I think that's still something we need to explore, absolutely, and I think that's feasible. Are there other sport tenants or other types of tenants you can get? You look at other venues across this country, you can see there are various sports being played. Halifax right now has had a long-standing lacrosse team. So, you know, there are things like that that we need to explore and find and, you know, look at continuing to try to find and work with our promoters and that community to get more concerts here, but also to work around, you know, look at sport tourism, what could we do in generating more large-scale events like the Grand Slam of Curling and others that we could bring here and attract here, whether that's hockey camps or, you know, hockey showcasing or other types of things that we can do. So all of that is definitely what we need to focus on. And I think when I came here, that was the energy that I tried to bring as well. This is not a complicated business model, Tim. We need to generate more events and activity to generate more revenue.
Your model is not complicated. Agreed. But you're also fighting with, as you well know, the realignment of the way, particularly in hockey, professional sports franchises are looking at how they align themselves. Look, where I am in Ottawa. Ottawa had a farm team in Binghamton, New York for a long period of time. Not that far away from here. They went closer. They went to Belleville. Toronto has the Marlies. Rumor circulating today, of course, is that the Growlers could end up in the, or the Marlies could end up in the empty Hamilton Coliseum, which is doing the same, Cops Coliseum, doing the same thing we're trying to do with the Mary Brown Center, is get bodies in that place and have the revenue that comes from it. In the line of creativity, and again, recognizing what your remit is, but do you think, been there not quite a year yet, you've been there 8 months, I guess, is there a willingness from any public body you see in the province and or federally to become more involved in inducing a professional sports tenant? Now, that induction, as you know, inducement can come in many forms. Usually it's tax breaks. Yeah, it can be, you know, how you share the revenue around parking and all of that. But is there a will for more public involvement?
I mean, that's a good question, and it's one that I, quite frankly, have not fully explored with either the city, the province, or the federal government. And really, you know, that's part of what the opportunity is. If we do have potential partners or opportunities, but they do require or are seeking some type of incentive or support to make that happen, that's when we'll cross that bridge. I have not yet, because quite frankly, didn't have to. But in this new environment, is that something we need to explore? Yes. I mean, I do know in my previous time, because as you know, I had a previous career in the provincial government, senior level, these were things that came up from time to time. And I remember at times when I was Deputy Minister of Tourism, Culture and Recreation, where there was often, you know, a conversation or debate about should we or could we support supporting teams or professional teams and the like to have a presence and, you know, and be positioned here in the province. That is one that we may very well have to revisit. Who knows? I mean, I do know this, that, I mean, these buildings, you know, both the Convention Center and the Mary Brown Center are important public facilities. The Mary Brown Center is impacted by this decision of yesterday from the ECHL, without a doubt. We will need to find creative ways of putting more things in the building. But I think it's important for us as a community to rally around that and see what we can do. I mean, I've been very upfront saying we need to make the buildings more accessible, more reflective of the community. We need to, you know, look at ways that we can do more things in this building. And that's what I'll explore. I mean, you know, we have a very strong hockey culture, just to get back to that side of the story, in this province. Very strong support at the minor level, the junior level, and the senior level. You know, are there ways that we can do more of that here? And there's, you know, so those are the things, Tim, that, you know, we'll let the dust settle a bit here. We got to try to, you know, just sort through what's happened in the last 24 hours, because this did happen abruptly. I mean, you know, some may suggest we've seen it coming, but I don't think any of us seen it happen so abruptly. And we will, I mean, I know the team here is committed to being creative and innovative in what we can do to bring back those event nights here in the building.
Just before I let you go, you will know too, of course, for a number of years, ACOA helped fund CFL games in Atlantic Canada and the like. So there have been avenues before. Ownership's a whole different thing, and you and I don't have time to get into that. Just the last question for you. How does this impact the upkeep and the maintenance of the facility? Because there's a war on, as you know, Brett, better than I, for I want to go to the newest facility. I want to go to the facility that's humming, that's got the digital screens, that's got all of the bells and whistles. It's hard to make a case for more money coming into a facility if you don't have as much going on there. So should citizens be concerned that, you know, there may be challenges to the upgrading, the maintenance of the Mary Brown Center, or that's not something you're worried about at this juncture?
It's not something I worry about a lot right now, Tim. I mean, the building is over 20 years old. Yeah. We've done a good job. They've done a good job over the years of maintaining this building and introducing, you know, the things that need to be introduced in terms of, you know, modern, and whether that's the, you know, the maintenance build, the maintenance side of it, or the building operation side of it, to the fan experience side. And I know in the short time I've been here, we've been thinking about how we can continue to enhance that experience by introducing more ways of us engaging with fans pre, during, and post events here and within the building. So it's not something that I think we need to be concerned about right now. I mean, obviously, you know, over time, if we struggle with putting this building, we will struggle with that. I mean, revenue is an important side of this. I think this building is in great shape. If you talk to those who use the building, whether you talk to the tenants, the Growlers when they were here, the Rogues, when you talk to promoters, they'll all say they love the building. They feel the building's in great shape, creates a great fan experience. So there's a lot of positives about this building. And I think that, you know, we need to embrace and support what this building, the role this building, the Mary Brown Center in particular, but also the Convention Center play in the social and economic fabric of our community. They're important players. Mm-hmm. You know, there's big memories that have been made at the Mary Brown Center. We wouldn't have had the Guzzu's first Briar one. Yep. Well, we wouldn't have had General Jones the Shot happen here. We've had the Kelly Cup wins. All those big things are things, concerts that people have gone to over the years. You need facilities like this in a city like St. John's. And I think now is a time when my call would be, it's time for, you know, the community at large, the business community and others, to continue to rally and support. And I will certainly, you know, be trying to bring every ounce of energy I have and vision that I have to try and turn every stone I can to try to continue to create more events and activities and memories down here at Mary Brown Center and the Convention Center.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there. Your enthusiasm will help in this drive. And good luck to you, Brent. St. John's needs that. The province needs that facility to hum. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you for your interest, Tim. Thanks. Bye.
Okay. That was Brent Mead, the CEO of St. John's Sports and Entertainment. When we come back, single seniors for tax fairness. I'm sure this will be something everybody out there will be listening to. Back shortly here on VOCM's Tim Power Show. There you go. Well, welcome back. When I saw this news release yesterday from the single seniors for tax fairness, I said, we've got to get these people on, because I have heard this story often, including in my own house from my mother, about how unfair Canada's tax system can be for seniors. So Single Seniors for Tax Fairness is lobbying the federal government to review the Federal Income Tax Act to provide fairness and equity for single seniors, lifetime single, widow, divorced, or separated seniors aged 65 and plus. And to talk about their work and what they're trying to achieve, I'm joined by Elizabeth Brown, the director director of Single Seniors for Tax Fairness. And Elizabeth, I understand you got a bit of a Labrador connection, do you?
I do. Hi, Tim. Nice to speak with you. Yes, my father tells me that I was the first child born in Labrador City, Newfoundland.
Well, we need a tax credit. Get the CRA to put that in there.
That was like 15 minutes of fame at year dot, I'm afraid. So the city was incorporated in the summer of 61, and I apparently showed up a few months later, and I was the first one.
Well, again, the Canadian tax code has so many loopholes in it. Maybe we could get that one in there. But on this issue, Elizabeth, I have a mother who I won't say how old she is or I'll be in a lot of trouble, but she is a senior. She is widowed and she gets killed at tax time. Now she's fortunate that, she does okay, but there seems to be sort of like a gross weighting against single seniors, not just single seniors, but often single seniors. So who are you representing and what are you trying to achieve?
Well, like I say, we, as you outlined, we do want to get changes to the Income Tax Act to increase the equality in the taxation of single seniors. So as your mom might find out, so we did a number of scenarios at different levels of family income to see, what could a single person be paying in tax versus a couple. So we looked, for example, at a family income of $50,000. A couple may spend roughly $1,200 in taxes on that $50,000, but a single person may pay up to $6,500. That's a 5.5-time tax differential on that same $50,000. And that's due to things like the inequality of pension income splitting, the fact that with a couple, each member of a couple can claim up to 3 credits, a person amount, that's pension amount, non-refundable age amount, and they can also share unused credits between each other. And, of course, a single person cannot split income or get double credits. And then also, if you look at what those things do, is those can drop couples below the clawback levels for things like old age security and the non-refundable age amount tax credit. So all of those things combined, we can end up with quite a significant tax differential. So what our group is lobbying for is to say we don't want to change anything that couples receive, but we do think there's an opportunity for greater equality in the taxation of single seniors. And as you pointed out, quite often when single folks realize that there's a challenge is when they lose a spouse. So they're often at the worst times in their lives, and this is when they find their taxes go up significantly. They could find things like their old age security or their non-refundable age amount tax credits, they get clawed back. But their expenses don't change, and I think that's another part of this. If you look at a lot of the significant expenses that singles have, marital status makes no difference. Property tax, rent, mortgage, utilities, insurance. You know, I'm going to get my snow tires off next week, and I don't think they're going to ask me what my marital status is. I have to pay the same whether I'm married or single.
And you can't income split, and that is, as you allude to, a significant issue. So what specifically, Elizabeth, are you hoping for? You put in a pre-budget submission to the Finance Committee. What have you asked for?
Well, we've asked for 5 recommendations, so some form of tax provision to kind of offset some of the inequality related to pension income splitting. We've asked for an additional non-refundable tax credit that's equal to half of the person amount, which was roughly $7,500 in 2023, an increase in a pension income amount from $2,000 to $3,000 for single seniors, increasing the clawback levels, so not only for old age security, but the age amount. I think we sort of forget that second one in our discussion of taxation. And then we have another issue, which is not specifically related to income tax, but on the death of a single senior, if they have RSP or RIF assets, those can be cashed out in year of death up to 50%, where, of course, couples can transfer those assets tax-free. And so what we're asking is that rather than, you know, taxing those assets at 50% on the death of a single senior, is there a way to maybe spread the payments of those assets out over 10 years and then take taxes out over 10 years? We know RSPs are tax deferral. They're not tax avoidance. So, you know, we know we have to pay the tax, but it's just, are there ways that we can reduce that tax burden?
And again, that makes a huge difference, particularly now. Every story in any day deals with affordability, 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 affordability. And if we cannot find some relief for people, the affordability crisis is going to get worse. Just before I let you go, have you got any feedback from Minister Freeland's office? I mean, I know how the submission to a finance committee works, but have you gotten any bites from anybody who say, we like what you're saying, and you may see something on April 16th or sooner, given the way the budget's rolling out these days?
Well, we actually, last year in the Finance Committee report, they did make a recommendation that hopefully we'll see. The recommendation is 115, in case anyone really wants to look this stuff up, but it's called Examine the Financial Support Measures Available to Seniors to Ensure Equitable Treatment Between Single Seniors and Single Couples, including by considering the potential benefit of a non-refundable tax credit for single seniors and a higher threshold for the clawback of old age security. Now, that addresses some of our issues, but the fact that it at least made it into a report coming out of finance last year is a step in the right direction.
Go ahead.
No, and I think, and again, we'd really sort of love the politicians to focus on the issues at hand. As we mentioned, these issues are caused by pension income splitting, the fact that folks, married folks, can claim 6 credits, 3 each, the clawback levels for old age security, the transfer of RSP RIF assets. Any government policy or program that does not address those issues will have the problem whether those policies are in place or not. And I'm thinking of things like dental care, pharmacare. Mm-hmm. Those do not touch taxation. They're lovely to have. They're also not targeted at seniors, and they have nothing to do with marital status. So I'd love the politicians to really focus on the issues that are causing these problems.
And we appreciate you sharing your insights today. And good luck. We'll be watching this. And, of course, you have a website if people are interested, singleseniorsfortaxfairness.com. I'm sure they can go on. You have a Facebook and do some advocacy for you, too, because I know, Elizabeth, that letters and calls to parliamentarians do still have some impact, so go for it.
Great. Well, thanks very much for your time, Tim.
All right. Thank you. That was Elizabeth Brown, Director of Single Seniors for Tax Fairness. Again, I know it's a big issue in our province. Now we've got Ben Murphy on the line, who is going to be succinct and tight in the 5 minutes that we have him. Although, teasing aside, Ben, I saw your post today. I've seen a lot of people posting about the demise of the Growlers. Boy, it's been a gut punch to a ton of people in our community.
Yeah, it really has, Tim, and thanks for having me this afternoon. I do appreciate it. I'll try my best to be tight, but you and I both know I'm not good at that. But yeah, Tim, a gut punch to say the absolute least. I mean, it really is just heartbreaking, right? And I think that goes for both, you know, your hockey fans, your Growlers fans, but then just sports fans in general. And it even goes a little beyond that, because a lot of people took in Growlers games, but a lot of people from a lot of different parts of the community, from newborn babies to service dogs to, you know, everything in between. And it really was special. And a lot of people held a really close connection to the Newfoundland Growlers, the players, the fans, the relationships that were built from sitting next to people in the seats that you maybe didn't know before. All of that stuff. And, you know, to have that taken away from people in St. John's and right across the province and even beyond, there are Newfoundland Growlers fans everywhere. It really is sad. It's a heartbreaking turn of events.
Yeah, it's the memories that you talk about, too. I mean, you were so kind to us last year when you, Patrick, and I were at a game. You were broadcasting, and you kindly took Patrick down, and he got an autograph, and he still has that jersey, which he treasured, and your colleague gave him a puck. And, I mean, that's happened to hundreds, if not thousands, of kids, and it makes such a big difference, and they remember that forever. Ben, what about your coworkers there, the players, the team staff? We haven't heard much about them, but, boy, they must be really down right now.
Yeah, I'll be honest, Tim. I haven't spoken to many players. I saw a post from Adam Daw, and he basically just posted a few pictures in the Growlers uniform. Adam Daw being from Gander and a great Growlers forward every time he was on the ice. He posted basically, you know, just saying that getting the chance to play the game you love at home, how special it is. And I think that's how a lot of players are feeling. There's definitely a bit of shock, no doubt. I mean, ECHL players on ECHL contracts do have the opportunity to sign with another team if they can. Obviously, that's not guaranteed for anybody. And AHL players on AHL contracts, they might be in tough to find a game for the rest of the season. So, you know, you do really feel for the players, the many staff involved, because a lot of hands go into putting off a professional hockey game. It really is remarkable. From the on-ice and off-ice officials to the game's crew, you know, Chris Ballard, he does endless amounts of preparation on a game day. He's there for a good solid 12-plus hours. So it's a lot of people who are hurting. It definitely came as a shock. And you know, you do just – you feel for people whose livelihoods were upended yesterday. And, you know, there's a lot of jobs lost. And you can't overlook that aspect because it is really hard. And you do just really hope for the best for all the great people that are involved with that organization that are going to go on and do great things.
You're covering this again tomorrow, as is important to do on the morning show. Before I let you go, I mean, you've played a high level of hockey in the province. You've worked for the Growlers for a while. You know professional sport well. I mean, I have to ask you the question we're all asking ourselves. Can we have a sustaining, consistent, and this is not a knock at Dean or Danny or anybody who's owned a franchise, because they have tried their best, and I know those gentlemen well, and I know they poured their guts into it all, but is it possible in this age of professional sports, particularly hockey, to be able to keep a franchise in a city for, you know, more than 5 or 6 years, or is this just the nature of the beast?
Well, that's the million-dollar question that I think everybody wishes they had a firm answer for, but don't really have one. I mean, you just can't ignore the geography of it all. And, you know, I said this morning when chatting with Jerry Lynn Mackey on your VOCM mornings that I don't care what anybody says. You know, geography definitely plays a factor in all of these decisions. I mean, the Winnipeg Jets with the St. John's Ice Caps had an AHL sellout record of a sellout streak, and that still may be intact and hold up in the AHL. I'm not sure offhand, but attendance was never an issue. People packed those games in that rink every night, and they still moved because at the end of the day, Winnipeg wanted their AHL team closer to home. Why would you try and fly a guy out when you need him morning of because someone gets hurt in morning skate and you need him in the lineup by later tonight? Well, why would you fly him all the way halfway across the country from St. John's, Newfoundland, when you could get him to jump in the car from Manitoba, make your way over, and you're there in 30 minutes. You know, it's just logistically, it makes more sense for these teams to have their affiliates closer to home. And I think everybody understands that. And hockey is a very expensive sport. It's a very expensive sport to just play it, just to suit up and go out for a game of shinny. It's expensive, much less when you're talking about a 25, 30 person team that's going to travel on the road. And you think about a hockey bag that goes with every single one of those people. And then you think about there's two ginormous bags that are just full of jerseys and socks, and then a giant stick bag, and then medical kits, and the list goes on. It's incredibly expensive. And I don't know if in this current economic climate, to say the very least, that it's just hard to know if it is sustainable and if it is possible. But my heart just goes out to the many great hockey and sports fans, you know, right across the province who do care deeply about the game of hockey. They care about their teams passionately. You could see that in Growlers Nation. It's just an incredibly passionate group of people who care so much. And my heart does go out to those people because they deserve professional hockey here in St. John's and right across the province. And I just really hope that we can find a solution and get the great game back here as soon as possible.
We all do that, and let's hope that is the case, because it's also so symbolically important. Where there's a will, there's a way, despite all the valid obstacles you've laid out there. All right, Ben, we'll be listening tomorrow morning on the VOCM Morning Show. Thank you for joining us this afternoon, and hang in there. I know this is pretty personal for you, but I appreciate you sharing your thoughts.
No, thanks for this, Tim. Appreciate it.
Okay, that's my colleague Ben Murphy, who, as you know, did work with the Growlers for a long time as well, was their color guy. He and Chris Ballard now don't have those roles. That's tough for everybody involved. Okay, time for a break here on the Tim Power Show. When we come back, speaking of hockey games with elbows up and high sticks and fights everywhere, we're going to talk about the carbon tax fight with Susan Delacourt, national columnist with the Toronto Star, after this break. We'll be right back.
The Tim Powers Show. Join the conversation weekday afternoons at 4 p.m. on your VOCM.
Yeah, I don't know what's rougher these days. Bench clearing brawl at a Growlers game or a former Growlers game, or the whole scrap that's happening over carbon tax, carbon price in Canada. To help answer that question, I don't know if she's ever seen a Newfoundland Growlers game, but I know she can skate through anything, is Susan Delacourt, national columnist with the Toronto Star. Susan, how are you?
I'm very happy to be talking to you, and I would go to a Growlers game readily if it meant I get to visit that beautiful province.
Well, I know you love our province. You did some studying there before when you were on a on an exchange group. You've written some great stories about the mothers of Newfoundland as well, which you and I got to chat about. But in your column now, you're talking about column of yesterday, talking about Premier Fury. It starts off, Newfoundland and Labrador Premier Andrew Fury has asked Justin Trudeau to call an emergency meeting on the carbon levy. It's a good idea, and the Prime Minister should take him up on it as soon as possible. Do tell, Susan, why?
Because you're watching it as I am. I don't claim to be really close to it, but I think enough already. We've heard everybody's come up with rebranding and slogans and rallies and talking points. And I would like to see an actual conversation between the Prime Minister and the premiers about the carbon levy, carbon tax, whatever you want to call it, whether we're talking about affordability, whether we're talking about what to do about climate change. And this debate touches on both of those big issues and how we get through this beyond yelling at each other.
Yeah, I, you know, I'm with you on that. It just seems such a difficult thing to do. I love the concept that you floated and you had borrowed it from Peter Mansbridge. You'd seen him speak here last week at an event, and it was a return to the old first ministers' meetings, the televised ones. And of course, we remember those well in Newfoundland and Labrador, whether it was Brian Peckford and Pierre Elliott Trudeau, or Brian Mulroney in Meech Lake. And of course, you had an interesting role in the storytelling of all of that. Why is that a good idea here, do you think?
Because I was actually thinking about a November meeting. I didn't have room in the column to write this, but a November 1989 meeting I was at, and it was the first time that Brian Mulroney and Clyde Wells ever sat down and talked about their differences on Meech, and where the premier gave as good as he gets, as everybody knows. And it really framed the discussion, I think, for Canadians in a helpful way. And, you know, Meech didn't turn out to be all that good for the Prime Minister. And maybe this meeting won't turn out to be all this good for the Prime Minister either. But at least the country got to see adults having a conversation. And yes, I should give Peter Mansbridge credit for this. I was at the event. You weren't there, were you, Tim? I didn't see you.
No, I didn't get a chance to go, no.
Mansbridge just floated this as an idea, you know, that it would be nice to see a more engaged debate once again between the provinces and the Prime Minister, like he had seen so many times in his day. And I was sitting next to a Liberal, and actually somebody who used to work in the PMO, and I turned and I said, "What do you think?" And he said, "Not a bad idea. Not a bad idea." And he said, "On climate, maybe." And that's, I think, where I started thinking, how do we get this aired in some intelligent way before a so-called carbon tax election? As we know, Kim Campbell famously said, elections are no time for serious debates. But I do think this thing has reached a crisis point now, I think, in the minds of fans of the carbon levy and critics of the carbon levy. This is a crisis. And I think the current premier of Newfoundland is very right to say this is an emergency and let's have a debate, and not one behind closed doors, in the open.
Do you think, though, we have the political in those days the cameras had a calming influence because it wasn't – they almost wanted those meetings to be publicly boring. They wanted it to be the theatrics of government doing government business. But is that even possible today? Because it doesn't seem like – beyond a few actors, anybody wants to have this conversation in a responsible way. And anybody is prepared to come up with a significant alternative solution path, as the Prime Minister has asked for, or to defend, even as the Prime Minister has tried, albeit admittedly way too late, his proposals. Is it possible, back to where we started, to have this constructive conversation?
I wouldn't still be working in this job I'm in if I wasn't an optimist, maybe a wild-eyed optimist. But I do think, and it's when I see things like Premier Ford and Justin Trudeau doing events together. You know, these guys campaigned against each other. And what I see when we write stories showing how one of my most read stories at the Toronto Star, I think, still to this day, is when I wrote about how the premier gets along with Chrystia Freeland. Mm-hmm. So maybe, you know, there's some element in society that enjoys people seeing people yell at each other. But I think by and large, most people are sane and like to see an intelligent conversation, and they reward the politicians who give that to them. So I haven't ruled it out. I think all of the premiers are capable of this kind of conversation, and Canadians don't see that as often as they should.
Well, you are on the voice of the common man making that case, and the whole history, and you know the history of this radio station, is part and parcel of that, a place where people come and civilly talk. Yeah, we have heated exchanges from time to time, particularly on our open line program, but it's generally served us well. I will leave it there for now, Susan, but thank you. Appreciate the time. And we'll be watching this to see if the Prime Minister does take Premier Fury up on his offer, because we are at a precarious time in our country. I don't think that's overstated. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks for asking, Tim.
All right. Thank you very much. That was Susan Delacourt, national columnist for the Toronto Star. You can get her column online. Of course, you can't get it on Facebook, I don't think. And the title of the column is Justin Trudeau's Facing an All-Out Carbon Levy Revolt. There is a way to fight back. What do you think about that? Leave us a message. Give us a call. We can fit you in Thursday, Friday. If you've got a view on you want to return to those first ministers' conferences, they were epic in some ways. I mean, great. Great moments of political theater, some of achievement, some of spectacular failure, if you look at Meech Lake. Anyway, we will continue to monitor that. Thank you again to the whole VOCM team. Claudette, thank you to all our guests today. Good, fast show. I hope you found it informative and instructive. Tomorrow, we're going to talk a little bit about curling. We're going to talk about an interesting exhibit that's going around the province and more of the issues that matter to you. Until then, I'm Tim Powers. Talk tomorrow.